In this episode, former Price Lab Research Fellow Emily Hammer, who is an assistant professor of digital humanities, archaeology, and anthropology of the ancient world at the University of Pennsylvania, spoke with former Price Lab Mellon postdoctoral fellow Lisa Poggioli about the ways digital tools have informed her anthropological research in Eastern Africa. They also discuss how Lisa combines digital mapmaking and social justice in her pedagogical work. This episode was produced and co-edited by Maria Chiamesso da Silva. Maria is currently an undergraduate studying at the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks for being on the podcast today, Lisa.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm interested in how you got into anthropology in Eastern Africa specifically, and how you got interested in the intersection of digital tools with mapmaking.
As often happens in the field of anthropology, people's interests are dictated a bit by serendipity. Ethnography tends to work that way. So I studied abroad in Kenya, and I loved it there. And so I started doing my research there, and then I really never looked back. In terms of my interest in anthropology, I've just always been interested in human difference and human similarity and how axes of difference fall. And then as my career has moved on, I've become very interested in political claims that different groups of people make on issues that they care about, and also how borders, boundaries, territories become configured in and through those claims. And so that's where the link to mapping comes in. One of the things that I came across when I was doing that preliminary dissertation research was an organization that was mapping digitally political violence that had taken place in the country. It was related to the 2007-2008 presidential election. And this organization started this digital mapping platform that asked citizens to text in instances of violence that they were witnessing. And so that was really a flashpoint where digital maps then became extremely widely used. Lots of outside organizations started using digital maps, to the point where I had folks tell me that if you don't have a digital map component built into your grant application, you know, there's no way you're going to be awarded the money. That's how fetishized they became.
Could you share with us the ways in which digital humanity tools are important for your research and also for your teaching?
Yeah, I'll share two different examples. I collected a ton of archival research on colonial map making in Kenya. All of that needed to be transcribed because there were no data repositories that existed. Something that doesn't get discussed enough in digital humanities spaces, because most of the time when we talk about digital humanities, we assume that the data is already present, right, online in some repository or something. Working in Africa, that's just not the case.
The data that you had to digitize and put together, was it from narratives about maps or from maps themselves?
Those were narratives about maps. I collected a lot of information from the colonial office, the Foreign Office, and the way that the information was organized in the archives is you would have these maps and then you would have associated documents. So documents where the officers would literally talk about why the maps were useful, what they displayed and what they showed. And so that was one portion of it. The other portion was in the surveying data. A lot of times the maps themselves weren't actually present, but it was just the sort of technical specifics around map making. So how does cartography happen in practice? And how were the teams discussing with one another about putting this border here or shading this in a particular way, or making very sort of fine-grained decisions about how to produce maps?
it isn't always the case that you have a specific narrative attached to specific maps. And of course, what each viewer sees in a map is very different. So studying the narratives that come out of maps can actually sometimes be quite a difficult endeavor.
Yeah, I was very lucky to find all of that information. And I think it also speaks to just how crucial maps were in the British colonial empire, in East Africa in particular. That's one digital tool that I've used and enjoy and think is useful. Another one that I'm using on a different project that I'm working on is Google Earth. That project is on urban refugees in issues of online security and offline security and how they navigate both worlds. The online portion is looking mostly at WhatsApp data. And I have used Google Earth to track their movement both within Kenya and then from their home countries to Kenya, where they're in this limbo situation while they're waiting to find out where they're going to be either resettled to or they have to be repatriated back to their country of origin. And then I also asked my research participants where they would ideally like to move to in the future.
In our seminar, you had talked with us about the use of digital map making in the classroom. So I wondered if we could return to some of those issues. Tell us more about the project that you did with your class in which you paired community partnership and digital map making and texts about the power and problem of map making.
So the class was called Mapping for Social Justice, and as you mentioned, it had three different components. One was a theoretical, historical look at maps and map making. So students read a lot of text and looked at a lot of examples of maps that have been produced since, you know, the 1400s until today. And then the second component was learning a technical tool, sort of digital humanities tool, if you will, which in this case was ArcGIS. So they did labs that taught them how to use ArcGIS for a particular purpose, which brings me to the third portion of the class, which was community engagement. I worked with an organization called HIAS, which stands for Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. They are a Philadelphia-based refugee resettlement and immigrant rights group. And I had previously had a relationship with them because I've been a volunteer. So I brought them along into the class, and they were very excited about collaborating with students who produced maps that would be useful to HIAS in some way.
I wondered if you could tell us more about the specific purposes of some of these maps and how they were designed to aid HIAS.
One of the final projects was on transportation in Philadelphia. So the students were trying to think about if public transportation in Philadelphia was equally accessible to everyone, and in particular, if it was accessible to areas of the city where large populations of refugees were resettled. So some of the maps they produced were evidence-based maps that would allow them to make particular claims. So, for example, maps that showed where the highest concentration of refugees were in Philadelphia, which would enable them to make the claim that those were the areas that they wanted to look at more closely. And then they were able to use different mapping technologies, not just ArcGIS, but I think this group in particular used PolicyMap, which enabled them to look at the density of public transportation stops in these particular areas, which helped them to build an analytical argument to show how certain areas of the city where refugees are resettled aren't as accessible to public transportation. And then they also built an interactive map for the recently resettled refugees to use themselves. So in this case, I guess you would think of it as a tool. They mapped parks and recreational facilities in these areas with high concentrations of refugees, with the idea being that refugees themselves could use them to locate where the nearest rec centers were near to them, where the nearest playgrounds were, etc. So it would be something that was refugee-facing as opposed to just HIAS as an organization facing.
It's great. That's a really ambitious project with a lot of different sets. This is such a complex class, and there's so many places for things to go wrong with the community partnership yep. and with the technology. And so it would be great if you could talk with us more about the challenges and drawbacks, but also the advantages of doing a class like this.
I'll start with the advantages. The advantage was that students were really all in on it because they felt like they were learning a skill that was very tangible moving throughout the class with these labs on a weekly basis. And they also felt that they were doing schoolwork or homework that actually created or contributed to a greater good in some way. And all of the students expressed that to me as the most rewarding part of the class. I think the challenges were mostly technological. It really made me think a lot about how a lack of built-in technical infrastructure in terms of coordination between different schools in a university or the economics behind getting access to technological infrastructure. And I was very lucky as an instructor because there are resources at Penn, including the Price Center and the Netter Center. But the challenge of getting access to all of those different pieces of the technology that were necessary to make the class run smoothly was certainly a huge challenge that would have been mitigated if that infrastructure was already in place, not to mention issues with confidentiality of data and what kinds of access students and instructors need to different tools in order to ensure the confidentiality of data. So, for example, I would not have felt comfortable allowing students to use something like Google Drive to save documents if I knew that refugees' personal information was going to be potentially compromised in any way or there was any possibility of that. Because we didn't use refugees' personal data, that wasn't an issue, but that would be something, for example, that I would have to think through if we did the class again.
One thing that we have talked a lot about is also the challenge of balancing your content or theoretical goals for the class with the technical side of things. And then with your class, there was even then this third component with the community partnership.
So I noticed that in the Monday portion of the seminar, which was the theoretical portion of the class, they were very interested, engaged, did the work, and I really felt by the end of most class sessions that they were getting out of it what I wanted them to get out of it. Because they were also learning a new skill in every lab, I didn't think that all the time students had that information that they had learned and digested from the Monday seminar at the forefront of their mind while they were engaging with the actual technology. And so one thing that I thought about after the course's conclusion is perhaps the next time I offer it, trying to do one longer chunk of time, so holding class once a week as opposed to twice a week, so that students would be forced to think about the theoretical material and the technical component.
Can you finish up by telling us about what you are doing right now in your research and writing, and in particular, how that intersects with map making and digital technologies?
So the project that I mentioned earlier where I was using Google Earth is one of the projects that I'm working on right now, where I'm trying to think about how urban refugees in Nairobi are navigating this really newly securitized and militarized urban environment in the city. So with that one, I'm working with Google Earth, and then I'm also working with WhatsApp data, which I previously mentioned, thinking about data usage of refugees and then looking at chats that they've sent me and what they're chatting about, how they're using WhatsApp to evade certain security systems, how they're using them to reimagine what security looks like for them, and how they're thinking about their home countries and their relationship to politics in their home countries and what that looks like online, or oftentimes what it doesn't look like, because many times these groups of people are afraid to say certain things on WhatsApp because of the way that this kind of data is compromised in their home countries. And then the other project that I'm working on is the relationship between colonial and post-colonial map making. And so I'm using this data from the archives, using Mallet, and then also just using Max QDA, which is a qualitative but really mixed methods software that allows you to do analysis of large amounts of ethnographic data as well as survey data.
Is your fieldwork complete?
On both projects, the fieldwork is complete, actually. So, and the analysis is pretty almost complete on both projects. The challenge is tacking back and forth between the two.
Well, great. We wish you good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Price Lab for Digital Humanities at the University of Pennsylvania would like to thank Penn Libraries, the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, and our Price Lab Fellows for their support in producing this podcast. To learn more about the work of the Price Lab, you can visit us at pricelab.sas.upenn.edu.